Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Now, welcome back. Two of snooker's greatest names join us today. They've both lifted the World Championship trophies, lived through the sport's most dramatic eras and helped bring snooker to a global audience. Ken Doherty, the underdog, who became 1997 World Champion, and Dennis Taylor, the 1985 World Champion, forever linked with one of the game's most iconic finals. We'll talk to them both in a moment. But Dennis Taylor, first, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Very well. You know, I was thinking about the difference between actors and snooker players, Dennis, and I think actors kind of hate talking about the role that made them famous, that moment, whereas in snooker, you love talking about the moment that made you famous.
I've been doing it for 40 years, telling everybody about how I beat Steve Davis, still doing it. We've been doing shows all over the UK in theatres, and we have a lot of fun with it. Steve's he's very funny to work with, so we've had a wonderful time, and it's hard to believe it's 40 years since that final way back in 85.
So you'll have a whole year out of it this year then.
We've had a whole 40 last year, years out of it. Well, listen, Steve's already booked it for the 50th anniversary. He's booked a series of care homes where we're going to play in.
I think the fun thing about these snooker reminiscing nights are that you put on exhibition games as well. That's the difference.
Well, it's all a bit of fun, a bit of crack, and we're looking forward to working with the darling of Dublin. Ken and me do quite a bit together, and we're looking forward. It's the 1st and 2nd of February. We're heading up to your neck of the woods.
That's,
I believe,
right.
You're
a
Monaghan man, are you?
The freshly revamped Newramore Estate, it's called now.
Stayed by McGettigan's. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. I do a bit of work with McGettigan's.
I
was over in Dubai there, one of the finest Irish pubs I've ever been in, and I've been in a few of them around the world. But I've been a sort of an ambassador for McGettigan's for the last 18 months. So really looking forward to seeing the new setup there. And it's not particularly great weather for the golf, but I'll be looking forward to going back in the summer and getting a bit of golf in as well.
It's the Donegal dynasty, the McGettigans, who were delighted when they came to Carrickmacross. But come here, I love the fact that you moved to England at a very young age, but it wasn't for snooker. You have a very fascinating kind of early life, don't you?
I was, I suppose, fortunate. The place I worked in Coal Island, it was only a small town, and the local pipe works, everybody seemed to go in there. And I was working in there, and the squad that used to make these pipes all got sacked one day because they made the pipes too quickly and they were playing cards. And I was just a little 16-year-old, and they sacked the whole squad of people, and then the manager came back and said to my mum, it wasn't Dennis's fault, he can have his job back. And I had decided I was going to go over and visit one of my aunts in England. I had four aunts in England, and I went over and stayed with them, and I went over to work. But I was quite good at snooker, but because we lived in such a small area, didn't realise how good I was until I moved over to near Blackburn. And then after doing a variety of jobs, I finished up managing a snooker club. And then, of course, I met Alex Higgins when he was only 17. He won the All-Ireland Snooker Championship. I won the British Junior Billiards Championship. And Girvan's Club in Coal Island brought me back to play an exhibition against Alex, who came over to Blackburn. I practiced with Alex for about 18 months. He won the World Championship. And then I decided that I'll have a go at being a professional. So that's it summed up pretty quickly there, Oliver.
Were there any jobs before you became a professional snooker player that you kind of look back fondly on?
Yeah. I mean, as I say, I would never have stayed in England if I hadn't had my aunts there. It was a bit like home from home because I was quite homesick as well. So luckily, I stayed there. And I was quite good at the old football. I played Gaelic for Tyrone Miners, and then I played a bit of soccer before I went to England. Played for the local football team over in Blackburn at the paper mill, and almost went for a trial to Blackburn Rovers. But I'm glad I didn't do that because I made the right choice by carrying on and practicing and playing snooker, never dreaming that the game would become so popular. There was only 16 professionals in the world when I turned professional back in 1973. So it's been great to see how the game has grown and flourished in all those years.
You're still a fan of Blackburn Rovers?
Well, I'm a United supporter, although a lot of people would still think I'm a Blackburn Rovers supporter because my two sons, who are now 52 and one's coming up to 50, they're still Blackburn supporters. So I used to take them down to Blackburn Rovers. So I'd be at Blackburn Rovers, but Man United, with the fact that George Best used to play for them, was my team and still is.
When did you notice that snooker was becoming a really, really blockbuster kind of part of this huge culture in Ireland and across in Britain as well? Is it late 70s?
I think, you know, Pot Black did so much for the game. Yeah, Pot Black started in 1969 and carried on through the 70s, and that made the game massive. It was taking the game on television into people's homes every week. And that, along with people like Alex Higgins, John Spencer, Ray Reardon, made the game very popular. Yeah. And, of course, then they took the World Championship to the Crucible Theatre in 1977. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden the game took off. And then, well, the 80s was an incredible time to have been involved in snooker. But now it's so popular all over the world, and in China in particular. I mean, all you have to do is look at some of the great Chinese players that we can watch nowadays.
Incredible. I mean, how did it, we don't even know how it exploded in China to such an extent.
Well, Steve Davis and me went into China back in 85. I think it was the back end of 85
or
86. And the game was popular, but nobody played it. We played two players. The highest break was 20. But they always liked it. They always liked to watch it. And all of a sudden, it took off over there. Ding Xiangwei, who moved over and lived in Sheffield, has a lot to do with the growth of the game in China. But nowadays, they're just so good, and they're getting so good at such a... There's a 14-year-old over there that has made a maximum break in competition. Really? It's quite incredible, and I think they're going to be around in the top 10, dominating the game for quite a few years.
What a TV audience they offer.
I missed that, Oliver. Sorry.
What a TV audience they offer as well in terms of the
numbers. Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. I mean, we talk about 18.5 million, 19 million watching Steve and me in that final. If one of the top Chinese players is playing, you could get maybe over 100 million people watching China. It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. You, in the 70s, it's becoming really blockbuster, and you make a final in the 70s. This would have been expected to be your major breakthrough, wouldn't it?
I should have won it in 1979, yeah. I beat the great Steve Davis, who Barry Hearn thought was his manager, thought he was going to win the World Championship his first year in, because he was beating all the professionals in every other tournament. But I managed to beat him, and I beat the great Ray Reardon, who had been six times champion. And I lost out to Terry Griffiths, who beat me in the final. And I had a pair of contact lenses that were fantastic, because I used to take my glasses off to play.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I got contact lens. They were brilliant, but I couldn't get on with the contact lens. Lost in that final, but then that's when I managed to get the old upside-down glasses. And when I got used to the upside-down glasses, they helped me. I wouldn't have won the World Championship without the big glasses that Jack Carnham made for me, who used to be a commentator and a professional player and worked with the BBC. So without the big specs, I probably wouldn't have won the World Championship.
You're taking me back to when we would push out the lenses of sunglasses and put on our glasses upside down to do the Dennis Taylor glasses.
Listen, Oliver, even to this day, when you meet somebody or you're doing a wee show and they've got a pair of glasses, they want to turn them upside down for the photograph. So I don't mind that one little bit.
Ken Doherty is on the line. Good morning, Ken.
Morning, Oliver. How are you?
Not so bad at all. 1997 is your era. There's Dennis.
Darling of Dublin, how are you?
Say hello to each other. come here, Ken. Your memories of the famous 1985 final as a young fella watching Dennis and Steve Davis, the two big names, go head to head.
Yeah, I mean, it was an iconic moment, you know, of course, in our sport. But only, for me also, you know, watching Dennis beat Steve Davis, you know, from so far behind, the dramatic black ball final, the whole country stopped still.
Yeah.
And it was very inspirational, you know, as a young lad watching, you know, and it sort of inspired me to sort of practice and play and try and become a professional and try and emulate what Dennis did. And he was a huge inspiration to not only to me, but loads of people, of course, in the 80s, like to pick up snooker. And that's when the boom of snooker really sort of started, you know, from that final onwards, you know.
Dennis, you hear this all the time when you're travelling, telling the story of 1985. There's a lovely message for Paddy and Nays. I have a lovely memory watching that incredible frame with my dad, a TV moment that will never be equalled. It's hard to believe the only time Dennis led in that amazing final was when he potted the black at the very end. I will never forget it.
Yeah, I lulled him into a false sense of security. I let him get so far ahead and he fell right into the trap, Oliver. Oh, listen, talking about Ken there, you know, I think it was with RTE, the first time I ever heard Ken's voice. I think he won the, was it the World Junior Championship, Ken?
It was,
the Under 18 World Championship.
Yeah.
And you were doing an interview, and they joined me. I was up in Belfast playing Alex Higgins for the Irish Championship, and I heard Ken Doherty's voice, and I thought, I like the sound of this fella's voice, but I never thought I'd be sick listening to you. But that's how far back it goes, when Ken was only 17 or 18, and we've been firm friends for many years now.
Ken, your 97 final, it wasn't... it was a tough battle getting there and playing against Stephen Hendrew, hadn't lost in a long time, but you trashed him.
Yeah. I always try and tell him that as well when I see him, you know. Yeah, of course, Stephen won it in, he'd won it 5 years in a row. He was gone for 6 years in a row, and it was actually the first time that RTE, actually, they bought the rights for only for the last session of the final. Which was on the bank holiday Monday from 7 to 10, I think, a finish, you know. So it was the first time that RT bought the rights, yeah. So the whole of the country, because even back then, believe it or not, it would have been certain parts of the country that didn't actually have BBC, you know.
Yeah.
So the whole country could see it, yeah. And it was such a wonderful match to beat Stephen, you know, because, he dominated the 90s. And to beat him at the Crucible was quite special, you know, and to break that sort of five, he was gone for 6 years in a row, like, you know, which is unprecedented. So, to beat him was the icing on the cake. And then coming back, of course, to Ireland, and the chief superintendent of Harcourt Street telling me that... that I stopped the crime in the city of Dublin between the hours of 7 and 10 because everybody was watching the snooker.
No way.
Yeah. That's exactly what he told me. Yeah, it was quite incredible. He says to me, Doherty, he says, you should be on television more often. He says, you make my job a hell of a lot easier in this city.
Very good. The psychology of it is fascinating when we see clips back. Stephen Hendry, known for his kind of very very frowny sort of, you know, villainous look almost. Whereas you were smiling,
Ken. He hasn't changed a bit. In fact, he's got more miserable as the years have gone on.
I remember seeing him outside. We were up in Glasgow. He was outside the bar in the hotel, just stood there outside the bar. I said, what are you doing there, Stephen? He said, I'm waiting for happy hour to finish. No, he's good fun. We joke about him, but and that Q-tips, I mean, he's that's so popular now on his you know, that Q-tips that he does on his website.
The psychology important for you as well, wasn't it, Dennis? Because Steve Davis was also a stoical figure, but he was he was like ashen faced at the end of your final.
I mean, if you think back, I mean, Stephen, Davis was the first to dominate. I suppose Ray Reardon won 6 world titles, but Steve dominated the 80s. There was very few people could beat Steve in the 80s. And then Stephen Hendry, when he did eventually manage to beat Steve Davis, he dominated the 90s. For them two players to dominate for a decade each was incredible.
Yeah,
and it took a couple of good old Irishmen to stop them in their tracks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they set the bar, and nobody will ever dominate like that again. We thought Ronnie might dominate the game, but it's too difficult to do that now. And if you look at, we've had 12 tournaments, I think it is, this season, and 12 different winners. It's amazing the way the game has changed.
It's busier than ever. Ken's final stopped crime. Your win was also unifying in the North, wasn't it, Dennis, in a surprising way?
Yeah, well, I mean, I used to, even when the troubles were pretty bad, I used to bring players over to do exhibitions, and not all the players would travel over to the north because of the situation, but people like Terry Griffiths, Doug Mountjoy, Steve Davis, Cliff Thorburn, we had some wonderful times and played at all sections of the community. And the fact that when I did manage to win that final the way I did, it brought everybody together. And that was wonderful to see when I went back to Cull Island, and I don't know how many thousands were jammed into the town. The people were from all over Ireland, from all denominations. But that's the way, snooker was always like that. It sort of brought all the communities together.
It was the same year that Barry McGuigan won his World Championship.
Exactly, yeah. I was at that fight. Yeah. I was ringside when Barry beat Pedroza. I'll never forget that as long as I live. I was sitting next to Dame Mary Peters, right next to her. We had to have an escort into the, I think it was Queen's Park football ground where Barry fought Pedroza. And it was 6 weeks after I won the World Championship, so I had to have an escort to the ringside. The crowd were incredible. Okay. And then for Barry to go and lift the world title, that was amazing.
And of course, you were from the Tyrone Catholic side of the community. Alex Higgins, Hurricane Higgins, he was from the other side. You had quite a rivalry there.
Well, we always did playing wise, but it was got nothing to do with with the religion side of things. Yeah. But it was just the fact that Alex had started to dominate the Irish Championship, I knew eventually, because I practiced with him, as I say, I met him when he was 17. He came over to Blackburn because I was based there. So, I learned an awful lot from Alex, and as I say, when I did turn professional, eventually it was great to be able to, go into Belfast and to be able to win the Irish Championship against a player, like Alex, who had become a world champion when he was in 1972.
He was a contrary character. Ken, you had your dealings with him as well.
I tell you. I've got a great story because I used to walk in Goffs, when the Irish Masters was on there, and Dennis was playing Alex Higgins, and Alex Higgins was coming back from his ban, and of course he was the lowest seed, and the lowest seed should always come out first and go to the greenside pocket. Mm-hmm. But Kevin Norton, the tournament director, says, I'm going to change it around, bring Dennis out first and Alex out second, because Alex coming back, he's going to raise the roof. Dennis will get a great reception anyway, being a former world champion. So Dennis came out first, knowing that he was the highest seed.
Yeah.
Went to sit because the highest seed always sits on the yellow side pocket, where when you look at a snooker table. And Dennis sat down in the yellow because he knew he was the highest seed. So he went to sit down the yellow side pocket and poured himself what he thought was a jug of ice water. Right? It was only when he sat down and before Alex was introduced and took a sip of the glass of what he thought was water, and it was straight vodka. Oh, he knew he was in the wrong seat. He had to go over to the greenside pocket where there was a jug of ice water instead of a jug of ice vodka.
You had to drink the whole jug of water.
That was Alex Higgins.
Alex, one year at the World Championship, the milk marketing board thought, this is fantastic. Alex Higgins is drinking milk, while he's playing in the World Championship. But as the days went on and the sessions went on, the milk was getting a little browner. There was large vodkas in the milk as well. So,
some character.
Yeah, he was quite incredible. He was unique, was Alex. There was only, ever be a one Alex Higgins. He was amazing the game.
Mm. But he said to me once when I was there in Goffs, I had to get drinks for the players, and he said to me the first time I met him, he says, if I ask you for an orange juice kit, he says, that means a vodka and orange juice. And I said to him, while you're playing, Mr. Higgins, and he says, yes, kid, and if I ask you for a vodka and orange juice, that means a double.
That was the code.
That was the code. And he won 5-1.
Oh my God. Don't try this at home, kids.
No.
Come here. One of the lovely the stories that we hear from you as you do these evenings around the country and both sides of the Irish Sea is the memories people have of watching it with loved ones that have since passed on. And both of you are grieving as well. Ken, famously, your dad didn't live long enough to see all of your success.
I mean, I watched my dad used to let me, stay up with him and watch Pot Black all those years ago, when I was only 8 years of age, And it used to come on about 9 o'clock at night, so it was quite late, but he was a big Ray Reardon fan, and that was the first time I saw snooker. I saw Alex Higgins play, I saw Dennis play, you know, all the greats, Ray Reardon, and that was when I was first, in captured by snooker, and I got a little snooker table from Santa at the end of my bunk bed.
Did you?
It was like a 2-foot by 1-foot table with little marble like snooker balls on it, you know. But my dad sadly passed away when I was 13, and never saw me play. Only on that little table, and never saw me play in any competition. But he inspired me, you know, as a young lad growing up, and even, you know, through my professional, that I knew he was looking down on me and gave me the opportunity, as my mum did, you know, all those years ago. And he was a great inspiration for me, you know.
And Dennis, you lost your mum just very soon after your win in 85.
Well, it was before that. In fact, I was playing up in Newcastle. I was in the quarterfinal of a tournament playing the best snooker of my career. And we lived in Blackburn, near Blackburn at the time, and got the terrible news. My mum was only 62, that she'd passed away with a heart attack, and she was quite a slim woman, and I just couldn't believe it. And I went back home and didn't want to bother with snooker, and all the family talked me into going back. And I played in the Grand Prix, and I went on to win that. I mean, it was incredible. And my mum was there with me, helping me along, looking down on me. I beat Neil Foles 10-3 in the semi-final, or 9-3, and then Cliff Thorburn in the final 10-2. And then I went on to win the World Championship a few months after that. And she was definitely there helping me for those two big major wins. And she certainly helped me to come back against Steve Davis. I was sitting in the seat. And even though the snooker in the Crucible's a cauldron, and you've got people right next to you, I was chatting away in your thoughts. So she was a big help, really.
Your mum, Annie. Yeah. And it was October she died, and in April was the final, was it? So it was that soon. Extraordinary. These are lovely memories, and thanks so much for the chat.
Yeah.
And people can enjoy more of it, of course. An evening with Dennis Taylor, Ken Doherty at the Newermore Estate in County Monaghan, just outside Carrickmacross there. It's on the 1st of February, newermoreestate.com. And due to demand, I see they've added a second date the following evening. So the 1st and 2nd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, so looking forward to it. I'll bring the cup along as well. I have the World Championship trophy with us. Yes, yeah, for photographs and that. So looking forward to going to the hotel, and looking forward to meeting everybody. And we'll have a great night. We always do, Dennis and I. We have a great laugh, some great stories, and hopefully some decent snooker as well.
Sounds deadly. And Dennis, maybe don't mention that you played Tyrone Minors while you're in Monaghan.
Why not? I'm so proud of that.
Enjoy it. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks, Oliver.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, Dennis.
Email oliver@rte.ie.